Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest disasters and figure out who's to blame. Today we'll be discussing the execution of Che Guevara. Now, Che Guevara is a divisive historical figure. Some people consider him a hero, and others consider him a terrorist. We're not here to decide whether he was one or the other. We're here to figure out who's to blame for his death. Here's what you need to know about Che Guevara. Shoot, you are only going to kill a man. These were the final words of Ernesto Che Guevara before he was executed by Bolivian forces on the afternoon of October 9th, 1967. But how did this Argentinian-born doctor become one of the most famous revolutionary figures in Cuba? And what led him to be captured and then murdered while fighting with the rebels for a Bolivian revolution? Let's start at the beginning. Che was born on June 14, 1928, in Rosario, Argentina. He was the eldest of five siblings in an Argentine aristocratic family that struggled financially to keep up appearances. Early on, Che developed a distaste for the pretentiousness of Argentine high society and an affinity for the common man. At the age of 23, his leftist views were solidified when he took an epic 9-month motorcycle trip across Latin America with his friend, Alberto Granado. After seeing the poverty and poor working conditions at copper mines in Chile and tin mines in Bolivia, Che wrote in what is now known as his motorcycle diaries that the Yankees had taken everything and left the native people, quote, only an ox. After completing medical school in Argentina, Che continued his traveling, this time ending up in Guatemala. The country was led at the time by the second democratically elected leader, President Jacobo Arbenz Guzman, and was taking steps towards land reform in favor of peasant farmers. Inspired by Arbenz's socialist steps, Guevara decided to stay in Guatemala to, quote, perfect himself and accomplish whatever may be necessary in order to become a true revolutionary. In 1954, the U.S. mounted a campaign against the Arbenz government, culminating in a CIA-backed coup d'etat, which brought an end to the first 10 years of democratically elected government Guatemala had ever experienced. Che, who had worked as a medic during the conflict, was solidified in his stance against the U.S. and imperialism, which he blamed for Arbenz's fall. Quote, "The last Latin American revolutionary democracy, that of Jacobo Arbenz, failed as a result of the cold, premeditated aggression carried out by the United States." Che escaped from Guatemala and went to Mexico in 1955, where he met Fidel and Raúl Castro, revolutionaries plotting the overthrow of Cuba's U.S.-backed Batista government. He joined forces with them and in 1956 boarded a leisure yacht Fidel Castro had obtained, named the Grandma. Che, along with 82 soldiers, landed on the island of Cuba days later. There, Che led the rebel forces as they battled on the Cuban countryside. His leadership was instrumental in the eventual success of Castro and rebel forces against Batista, culminating on January 1, 1959, when Batista fled Cuba and Castro declared victory. Che went on to help craft Cuba's land reform policy and serve as financial minister and head of Cuba's National Bank. He was rising through the ranks and was now viewed by some, the U.S. most importantly, as a symbol of the growing threat of communism and anti-imperialist sentiment. In 1960, the U.S. declared an embargo on all goods in and out of Cuba, resulting in Cuba increasing ties with the former Soviet Union. The U.S. was deep into the Cold War, and they viewed Cuba as a direct threat to their anti-communist campaign.
Good evening, my fellow citizens. This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. To halt this offensive buildup, a strict quarantine on all offensive military equipment under shipment to Cuba is being initiated. All ships of any kind bound for Cuba, from whatever nation or port, where they're found to contain cargoes of offensive weapons, be turned back. It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States, requiring a full retaliatory response from the Soviet Union.
In 1965, it is believed that Che told Fidel that he wanted to leave Cuba to aid in other revolutions. Fidel was active in his governmental support for revolutions happening around the world, and Che seemed to be the perfect leader for this. Backed by Castro, Che led a group of Cuban fighters in a brief intervention in the Congo, which many viewed as a failure. He briefly and secretly returned to Cuba, where he began organizing his next move, this time to Bolivia, to aid in the revolution happening there. In 1966, he left for La Paz, Bolivia. Che and his guerrilla troops attacked Bolivian forces at will. The CIA recruited a Cuban-American agent, Felix Rodriguez, to go to Bolivia to help track down and capture Che. On October 8, 1967, the Bolivian army had managed to surround Che and his troops. Che had been shot in the leg multiple times during the gun battle. When the Bolivian troops eventually approached the guerrilla fighters, Che shouted, "Do not shoot! I am Che Guevara and worth more to you alive than dead." Che was taken prisoner. The next day, the CIA's Rodriguez flew to La Higuera, where Che was in captivity. He was surprised by Che's appearance, later stating that the iconic comandante looked, quote, "like a piece of trash. He was a mess, hair matted, clothes ragged, and torn." Rodriguez told the Bolivian officials that the U.S. had instructed him to keep Che alive at all costs. He wanted to take him up to Panama for further interrogation, but the Bolivian government believed their only option was to execute Che. They felt that prosecuting him would generate sympathy for Che and Cuba. The final decision was radioed in: proceed with the elimination of Che Guevara. The official story would be that Che was killed in battle. Rodriguez later stated that when he told Che that he would be executed, his face turned white, but he then composed himself and said, quote, "It's better like this. I never should have been captured alive." Rodriguez then asked Che if he had any messages he wanted to tell his family. Che responded, "Tell Fidel that he will soon see a revolution in America, and tell my wife to remarry and try to be happy." Rodriguez stepped toward him, and they embraced. Then, Che stiffened, expecting Rodriguez to be the one who would execute him. But instead, Rodriguez left the room. The Bolivians drew straws to determine who would execute Che. Sergeant Jaime Terán entered the room, and Che demanded that he be standing during his execution. Che noticed Terán appeared nervous, and then, almost scornfully, he said his famous last words. Póngase sereno y apunte bien. Va usted a matar un hombre. Many versions of this translation have it as, "I know you have come to kill me. Shoot, coward. You are only going to kill a man." But in fact, the literal translation is, "Calm down and take good aim. You're going to kill a man." Terán hesitated, but then opened fire, hitting Che in the arms and legs. Che fell to the ground in pain, but did not cry out. Then, Terán fired again. This time, he hit Che in the thorax. He was pronounced dead at 1:10 p.m. on October 9th, 1967. He was 39 years old.
La bestialidad imperialista. Bestialidad que no tiene una frontera determinada ni pertenece a un país determinado. Bestias fueron las hordas hitleristas, como bestias son los norteamericanos hoy, como bestias son los paracaidistas belgas, como bestias fueron los imperialistas franceses en Argelia. Porque es la naturaleza del imperialismo la que bestializa a los hombres, la que la convierte en fieras sedientas de sangre que están dispuestas a degollar, a asesinar, a destruir hasta la última imagen de un revolucionario, de un partidario de un régimen que haya caído bajo su bota o que luche por su libertad.
Fun Facts, a.k.a. Death Stats. After Fidel Castro formally took power of Cuba, Che was put in charge of handling the counter-revolutionaries who had been captured. He took over a prison called La Cabana and for 5 months heard appeals. But Che was ruthless. Hundreds, possibly thousands of prisoners were killed by firing squad. After he was executed, he was taken away and laid out in the laundry house of a hospital. His body was photographed and people were brought in to identify him. Many criticized the distribution of these photos as Che appeared lying with his eyes open, shirtless, bearded, and dirty. Some said he looked Christ-like. Che's hands were sawed off and preserved in a jar to serve as proof of his death. In July 1997, his body was found near an airstrip in an unmarked grave along with six other bodies. His skeleton was identified after they noticed it was missing both hands. Hey, everyone. With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Thanks for having me back.
Fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi, guys.
And very special guests Andres Bartos and Neil Innes, hosts of the travel podcast Passport. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey, from Barcelona.
Thanks for having us.
Wow.
You're in Barcelona?
Yeah.
Oh, you nice. Can't tell because they're speaking out of a closet, a black box.
We're in a very dark room.
Guys, I mean, you were the ones who actually brought this topic to us, which I have been kind of avoiding like the plague. I got to start off saying this. Che is a bad name in my house, growing up.
So is the Delgado in your name Cuban-American? Or?
So I'm half Cuban, half Puerto Rican.
Okay. And,
but I grew up in Miami. Right. And that is like, you know, those Che shirts? They never surfaced in Miami. It wasn't until I went to college and my grandmother came to visit me for my graduation in New York. And she saw someone wearing a Che shirt, and she was like, "En mi puta
vida.
What's that mean?
It means like in my whore of a life or something. Yeah. Mi puta vida.
Mi puta vida. That's funny. Well, then I get to be the yang to your yin, I guess. I'm the resident Bolivian. In my country, in La Paz, you would have the face, the famous iconic Che over the University of Bolivia, which is like, imagine NYU with the face of Che on it. For years.
I can't imagine. Although, yeah. I guess I can imagine. NYU, for sure.
Yeah, actually, NYU. Maybe it's not the best. Yeah. Not the best example. Yeah.
But FIU, which is, you know, the local Westchester, Miami university, not so much.
Great.
I grew up in Australia, and my memories of Che are of him on T-shirts and on inside 16-year-old bedrooms, you know. Like, that's it. My knowledge of him is like, I thought he was a musician until I met this guy here. He was like Bob Marley and Che. Yeah.
The only thing I knew about Che for a really long time is that he was really photogenic.
Yeah.
That's all I knew.
He's a good looking guy.
Yeah. Very handsome.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, will you guys take a minute to tell us about Passport?
Sure.
Passport's a travel show. Kind of. It's more about stories that kind of shape a city through the people in it, or the music, or the art, or the culture. It's kind of a big open canvas for us to focus on why a city is the way it is, or something that you might not know about it.
Yeah.
And we decided to launch this podcast right in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Perfect time for travel.
Perfect time for travel.
It's a great show. And, you know, in listening to it, it kind of struck me. It's like, we here teach history through anxiety and blame. And you guys teach history through location.
Yeah.
Which is really
That's
nice.
It. That's it. That's exactly. A really nice way of putting it.
So I think, you know, right off the bat, we need to talk about Che himself.
Yeah.
And we do need to put him up on the board.
Sure.
And now, Andres, you're going to keep me grounded.
Okay. I would definitely put him on the board for sure.
Yeah.
I would.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
So, I mean, he, of course, must have known the risk he was taking when he decided to fight for so many different revolutions around the, you know, Latin America and South America. And a part of that was his desire to travel, or as I like to call it, his vagabond ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, he, you know, as we know, he famously took the road trip from, you know, Argentina, the Motorcycle Diaries. And this was a huge part of his awakening.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and that period of time was crazy. When my grandmother arrived to Bolivia, at that point, if you were Aymara or Quechua, if you were indigenous, and a white woman or man was walking down the street, you had to get off the street and tip your hat. Otherwise, you would be, like, put in prison.
Wow.
Yeah. That was the level we were playing at that point.
And this was it. Wow. When did your grandmother go to Bolivia?
She arrived in the 40s, but this went through to the 50s, around the time when Che would have been traveling around this time. Yeah.
So it was a heated time in South America.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it had been a heated time for a long time.
kind of born hot.
Yeah.
Latin America was born hot.
Was born hot. Never cooled.
And now let's take a quick break to speak with Professor Michael Bustamante, historian of the Cuban Revolution and assistant professor of history at Florida International University, about the political situation in Guatemala at the time. He gets to Guatemala in 1953. And what is this political situation at the time in Guatemala, and how does he get involved?
He arrives in Guatemala kind of... At the tail end, having traveled most of South America, he ends up finishing his medical degree at one point, but then he continues to travel and ends up further north. And he ends up in Guatemala at a really important time in that country's history, where a reformist, kind of self-designated revolutionary president, Jacobo Arbenz, who had been elected, is in power. And he's attempting... you know, having been elected via the ballot box in a transparent election that is validated internationally, to carry out really broad-based reforms, among which are land reform. That is, taking land away from a small group of people who had an insane amount of it and trying to redistribute it in small private property. This was a effort that was seen as radical, communistic in, you know, Washington, certainly at the time, even if the Guatemalan authorities didn't define it in that way. So he's there in the midst of all that happening. And he's also there in 1954 when Arbenz is overthrown by a coup that's orchestrated by the CIA. That's not conspiracy theory. That's just fact. You know, the documents are there to prove it. And so he witnesses all of that. And having seen the U.S. role, which was in theory covert, but also pretty obvious, that also shapes in the long term his view of the United States, which is going to obviously come to bear later when he shows up in Cuba.
We can also talk about, you know, in learning about him as a child, I was really struck by his rebel rousing nature.
Mm-hmm. Does that come from his family? Because his family were kind of wealthy. Was it like just an ultra rebellion thing?
His mother.
I
think. Yeah, his mother was the sharper kind of person in the family. Right. The dad was a very romantic man who, whenever there was a war or something was happening in Spain, he was like, "I'm going to go there and fight." Even when he did, and when Che went to Cuba, he was like, "If anything happens, I'm going to go to Cuba." He was already like a 50-year-old man at that point.
He also like had this like romantic, like he bought a plot of land in the middle of the rainforest in Argentina, and he was like, "I'm going to make a yerba mate farm." Like, does it get more idyllic than that?
Totally.
Ooch, do we put yerba mate on the board?
We will get so much Argentinian hate mail.
I was gonna go right to the source. I was gonna get really Freudian and say, let's just put his parents up there to this like straight away.
Honestly, we can.
Were they kind of well educated too? Were they?
Yeah.
They were doctors.
They were from the upper class. No, they weren't doctors.
They weren't doctors.
Yeah. He was one of these men that changed jobs constantly. Was always trying to be an entrepreneur, but was not very good at it.
Oh, awesome!
And she was a woman that could have gone very far, but became a wife. So she spent a lot of time just kind of entertaining poets, playing solitaire.
That's what I do.
Smoking.
And to your point, I think that they, you know, while they were in the upper class, they actually struggled financially. And so a lot of energy was spent in maintaining appearances.
Totally.
And I can imagine that that would really affect Che, like his relationship with money and what it means.
If we're going to put the parents on the board, then we got to put his asthma on the board then.
I agree. It was a big part of why they left the yerba mate farm and went to the city.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, absolutely opened his worldview.
Well, and it is defining to him because he always was struggling with that. And he couldn't play with the rest of the kids. He couldn't play football. He couldn't do certain things that there were months on end when he was in bed just reading. And it was fundamental to who he became because he would never give up. It was until the end when they had to carry him in Cuba through the Sierra. He was still like trying to fight even though he couldn't breathe.
Wow. Like Marty Scorsese.
Like Martin Scorsese. Very much like Martin Scorsese.
I'm sorry, why?
I didn't follow either.
Martin Scorsese had terrible like paralyzing asthma when he was a kid.
Oh, did he do? Yeah.
And
oh.
So he spent a lot of his time inside reading, not allowed to go out. He went from his house to the cinema and back home again.
And
that was his thing. Yeah. And then he ended up, you know, also...
What's the equivalent?
Fighting Bolivian.
DiCaprio, no, we must do one more take because I don't care about my asthma. So, you know, we have asthma. We have his parents up on the board. We can talk about his hubris. So, you know, he goes to the Congo. This is supposedly led by or supported by Castro and the Cuban government. And then it's a big failure over in the Congo. He comes back and that's when he goes to Bolivia.
He seems to be like a moth to a flame, right? Like have an eye for, you know, nose for trouble. So
Well, that's why you got to put him on the board. After Congo, going to Bolivia, I mean, it's stupid. I come at this from the opposite side that you do. So for me, I was learning about like the dark Che. And there's two Ches, or there's Ernesto and then there's Che. Ernesto, the guy that travels and was kind of learning about Latin America and meeting all these people and having this vision of what Latin America was, that's one person that actually probably could have offered something good. The doctor that went to the leper colony, that went to the tuberculosis hospitals, etc. The guy that then, when they landed on the on the beach in Cuba and chose the bullets instead of the first aid kit, that's the asshole.
What happened in between there then?
Oof.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. It's a perfect transition. Castro happened.
There you go.
Oh, right.
The power of Castro.
And I've been chasing Castro, wanting to put him in the alarmist jail for a long time. And now let's pause again to hear what Professor Michael Bustamante has to say about Che and Castro's relationship. So he then meets Fidel Castro and his brother Raul in Mexico City. And this is 1955. What has brought these two people together in Mexico City and why do they meet?
Yeah, it's a pretty fortuitous, I guess, set of circumstances. So on the one hand, Che is sort of run out of Guatemala on the heels of the coup against Arbenz, along with others that had been sympathizers of that government. And at the same time, you know, 2 years later in 1952, a guy by the name of Fulgencio Batista, who had been Cuba's president one time before during the late 30s and then in the early 40s, he's running for office again in 52. He's losing in the polls and decides, I don't really like the way things are going, so I'm going to stage a coup and put myself back in power. And he does that with relative ease. That galvanizes a whole sort of opposition movement against Batista, in which Fidel Castro is involved. Fidel Castro in 1953 has tried to launch an attack that would lead to the overthrow of Batista. It fails miserably. Fidel and his brother Raul are thrown in jail for a while. They get let out, kind of the biggest mistake Batista ever made, probably. And they then go into exile in Mexico. And so Che has arrived in Mexico City, having come from Guatemala. My sense is that in Guatemala, he had also met some early Cuban exiles of the Batista government. And so he had some sense of what was going on in Cuba and is eventually connected with the Castro brothers and develops a deep partnership.
Hear the rest of our discussion about Che Guevara's life and death on Thursday's episode of The Aftermath.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Is there a Che without a Castro?
No. He fell in love with Castro. Like when I was reading up on this, he wrote a poem for Castro when they were about to leave, and it's a total love poem.
Wow.
It's like, I will follow you into the battle, and you are my... I was like, whoa, Nelly.
Wow. Yeah. That's very romantic.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing about Fidel is he was charming. Like, he's amazing how he charmed people. It's incredible.
Yeah.
He got his money from the States to dismantle the Cuban apparatus.
Oh, sure. All right. Yeah.
That's crazy. He got the boat came from the States.
Here's what I'm going to do. Don't worry. You'll be fine.
Don't ask any questions.
One thing I remember reading years ago was that there's a scene with Fidel, Che, and Ernest Hemingway fishing together.
In Cuba.
In Mexico.
Oh, in Mexico.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering if you maybe I'll write a little love poem, Hemingway style, the love of my life.
Maybe Hemingway wrote it for him.
Can you get the red pen out, Ernest?
We have Castro up on the board.
Definitely.
And another big part of this Castro relationship is kind of Castro's betrayal with Che. He goes to the Congo and it's not working out. Before he goes, he writes this letter to Castro saying, I'm out, essentially. I got to go follow my heart. And Castro then reads this letter in a public speech so that everyone knew that Che was making this huge departure. Mm-hmm. And it was really a political move by Castro to do this. In part, he was distancing himself from the mess that was happening in Congo.
Mm-hmm.
And another part, we can discuss, it's like Castro could have been threatened. Number one, he could have been felt threatened by Che and his presence and his rise to fame. He was at this point by 5 years after the revolution, he's an idol. He's there are statues of him in Cuba. He's beloved.
To quote Almost Famous, your looks are beginning to be a problem.
Yeah.
And number two, Che was not really the kind of guy that you could easily control. He was a bit of a live wire. And that can be problematic when you're running a country.
Mm-hmm. And he was an ideologue. Like, Fidel was never really ideological at all. He wasn't even a communist before the revolution, really. Raul was. But Fidel was, he wanted to get Batista out for sure. He saw a great future for himself. But
he was the taller, more handsome one.
Yes. Raul had a little less chin. Although Fidel had a lot of beard, so we don't know what chin was going on there. Anyway.
Like, who knows? Peter Griffin chin.
Might have been. But Fidel was more about himself, I think, than anything else.
He was an opportunist.
Yeah.
If I don't say so myself.
Yeah. I think it's pretty universally agreed. He was an amazing opportunist and a very talented opportunist. Che was not. Che believed his stuff.
He was not a strategic.
No.
So then, there's this whole post or him going to Bolivia where Che thinks that he is being backed by the Cubans. And then he gets there and he has no support.
Nothing.
So in a way, you can pin it on Castro in two different ways. One for creating Che and then another one for sort of not fulfilling his side of the promise and supporting him.
If you want to get really Machiavellian, Che was worth more to him as a martyr than as a guy that was alive.
Sure.
You can control them when they're dead.
Yeah. Ooh,
man.
Ooh.
You just opened up a whole new message board.
new can of worms. I was hoping to put beards on the board, if possible.
Okay. I'm listening.
Beards, okay, go ahead.
I mean, the one thing that kept coming up when I was reading stuff is these guys were such machista
beardies.
Monsters. Well, it was like, the revolution, we're going to change the world, but, ladies, there's some good fighters, but, stay where you are kind of thing.
Well, we've slapped Latin machismo before. Oh,
we should definitely slap it again, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I like beards and I like Latin machismo. Okay, so I think we also need to talk about the United States because they're a huge part
in this downfall of Che and or, and actually in the execution of Che. The U.S. could be blamed for its foreign policy of fighting what they perceived as a communist threat in South America, just in general. They aggressively promoted democracy through imperialist means, the very thing that Che died fighting against. So this is according to thepanoptic.co.uk. They said the civil war, which erupted as a result of American intervention, stifled Guatemala's economic growth, put an end to its political independence, and allowed a corrupt ruling class to dominate the country for its own political and economic gain. Furthermore, the Guatemalan army's use of indiscriminate torture, rape, executions, and massacres were arguably among the worst human rights abuses of the Cold War, and all under the auspices of maintaining, quote, freedom in the world. The U.S.'s goal was to contain the spread of communism in Latin America, and in this, it technically succeeded, but Guatemala paid a high price.
Yeah.
I mean, do we really want to go for the whole of the USA on the court?
Like, you can narrow, we can definitely go narrow it down. U.S. government.
U.S.
I think.
Government.
U.S. government.
You can even put U.S. like United Fruit, CIA. You can put different stuff.
Right, because it's really the corporations that are occupying these lands.
Yeah,
but the government is helping them.
Yeah,
you
the
know.
Military is protecting the interests of these corporations
at all costs. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like American greed. But it doesn't give me the punch I want.
No,
you know?
To put on the board, yeah.
It's the government because they, you know, they have the power. But then these corporations are the ones who are funding, you know, these, you know, there's money going back to the government. They're the ones who are putting these people in power.
Corporate greed, fat cats. I don't know what can you put on
American fat cats.
There
American
you go.
Fat cat.
1960s American fat cats.
Okay.
Okay.
So we do need to talk about the CIA. They're the ones who assisted and even trained the battalion, the Bolivian, you know, battalion that found him. Then, you know, there's this guy, Felix Rodriguez, who he's the head CIA guy who gets sent. He gets sent to bring him back to the United States. And obviously it doesn't work. But in 1976, according to the summary of a CIA debriefing, it says, although he apparently was under CIA instructions to do everything possible to keep him alive, Rodriguez, who I should side note, is Cuban American,
yep.
And his uncle had been a minister in the Batista government.
Oh,
so right. His family had fled to Miami.
Ah.
Rodriguez transmitted the order to execute Guevara from the Bolivian high command to the soldiers at La Higueras.
Mm-hmm.
And he also directed them not to shoot Guevara in the face so that the wounds would appear to be combat related, and personally informed Che that he would be killed. After the execution, Rodriguez took Che's Rolex watch, often proudly showing it to reporters during the ensuing years.
Che had a Rolex?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was curious.
Bling, baby. Communist bling.
Like, now I don't like him.
You got to keep time in communism.
Yeah, you're like,
but yeah, if we're putting up Felix Rodriguez in the CIA, then we also have to put up the Bolivians themselves, because Felix had the order to not actually kill. The Bolivians were like, "No, we're going to kill him."
You're really going to hang yourself?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The army.
And what do you think about the Bolivian president at the time, Barrientos?
Yeah, he was not. Yeah. He's a bit of trouble.
Is he your Castro? Have you?
We've had so many. I mean, the thing about Bolivia is the bar is very low. We've had such bad presidents. It's hard to put him in a ranking. There's an interesting story, which is talking about the fetishization of the stuff, his Rolex and all this. I went to school with a girl that was in my class. Her father was the helicopter driver that brought the battalion to capture Che. He was the man that took the last picture of Che, that, you know, well, he was still alive. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
With Felix Rodriguez's camera.
Wow.
And Che gave him his last notebook that he used for giving orders out to the rebels. So if you went to his house, he would show it to you. This was Che's notebook.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
It's crazy, huh?
Just had like shopping lists and drawings of penises in it.
Just little heart, like Fidel, and a little heart, and then shopping lists.
It's so interesting. It's like even the people who wanted Che dead were kind of fangirls over him.
Absolutely. That whole scene right before they kill him, it's this weird kind of Justin Bieber vibe, but at the same time, he's a good-looking guy. What can you do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he was ugly, this situation wouldn't have happened. We have to put attractiveness on the board. Che's hotness.
So, you know, to your point, I think that the person who was feeling threatened the most was the president.
Well, it's a delicate balance because you also don't want to look like you're the puppet of the United States and doing the bidding of the United States, which is a huge thing at that point. So if you're the guy who killed them, at least you can, you know, walk into the bar and be like, I killed Che.
I think we should just put the president.
I'm putting Bolivian / Rene Barriento.
I got a question. Maybe a spanner.
Yeah.
Alberto, the guy.
Granado?
Yeah.
The guy that traveled with him in Motorcycle Diaries?
What was that relationship? Was it like, come on, Che, let's go. Let's go.
Yeah.
He's got to go on the board.
Oh, wow. You're going back in time.
I got to go back.
And you're dragging his friend onto the board.
Thinking about it. Yeah, his friend, the guy who, like, the bad influence, he takes you to all this.
I mean, he was kind of a good guy.
But if that was the trip that opened up his eyes to the poverty of
sure. I would actually put the second trip friend on the board more than Alberto.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he was not a good travel buddy.
You're talking about the guy who gets him to Guatemala.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy was bad influence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know bad influence.
He's had so many. His wife, you've got to put on the board.
That's anybody can end up shot in Bolivia. It just takes the right woman, the right friend, and the right bar.
Yeah, that's right.
wow.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
Yeah. Next time I say, let's go to Bolivia, let's go to Bolivia.
Yeah.
To Neil's point, friendly influences should definitely go up on the board.
Yeah.
I know I've said this before in the podcast, but my mom has a saying that she traumatized me with, which was that, tell me who your friends are. Mm-hmm. Tell me who your friends are, I'll tell you who you are.
Yeah.
I want to put one last thing up on the board.
Great.
I want to put his famous picture.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what came first, the icon or the picture?
Mm. Yeah.
And this is a photo that was taken by a Cuban photographer, Albert Corda. And it's obviously been the one that's been replicated the most. And it was taken in 1960 when a ship of weapons had exploded in the Havana Harbor, killing more than 100 workers. And it was blamed on the CIA working with the Cuban counter-revolutionaries. And then in a ceremony held to mark the incident, Corda took this picture in passing. He didn't think much of it. It was actually apparently rejected by some newspapers.
Yeah.
Someone came to him and was like, do you happen to have a picture of Che? And he's like, oh, I have this one on my wall. Like that I took a while ago. And of course it's it's the famous image, but that kind of, in the end, his fame is what got him captured.
I heard something about the screen print, the guy who made it like kind of doctored it a little bit. He like moved Che's eyes up and like put them slightly closer together.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, he altered it to make him more handsome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Are we putting Photoshop on the board?
Yeah, let's put airbrushing.
Just like
merch? Should we just call it merch?
Merch. I like that. That's a great thing to put on the board.
Death by merch. That's
100%.
Everyone's got a merch page. These days. You have like 1,000 Twitter followers. It's like, buy my merch.
Is there anything else that you'd like to throw up on the board before we start? Oof,
what's up there?
We've got machismo. Right. Beards are up there. Yeah. I'm happy about
I'll
that.
Give you a,
fat cats.
I'll give you a quick rundown. So we got Che himself, Che's parents, asthma, Castro, beards, Latin machismo.
Sure.
Yeah. Everything you say, we put up on the board.
That's fantastic. You know, I'm very happy. I'm embarrassed and happy at the same time.
American fat cats, the CIA, Bolivians / I guess Rene Barriento, hotness.
Being too hot.
Being too sexy. Hot. Bad friends, and famous pick / merch.
Off the bat, I think we can take hotness off. Because
otherwise, we'd all be in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
nice. Well done. Well done.
I like my freedom. You know what I mean? I don't want to go to an alarmist jail.
I would agree with that because, I mean, I guess if you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, then if the guy who had shot him had found him attractive, he might have let him out the back door.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's more in the merch territory. It's the icon, right?
Yeah.
The
Yeah. I also think that we can take beards off. Now,
that's a shame.
Not in all fairness, while he was reading it, I was like, oh, I think beards might go to jail because that's what kind of gave him away. And I know that he shaved in order to get into Bolivia. Yeah. He, you know, shaved his beard and he also plucked the top hairs out of his head so that he would look bald.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think we can take beards off. And as much as I want to also blame asthma,
it's unfair. Yeah,
it is unfair.
That one's kind of tickling me the most.
You like to put what do you want to put asthma in jail or?
That could possibly be rolled into Che himself because you have it that bad. You have that kind of an affliction. You know.
Yeah, you're right.
Insane.
There's no asthma if there's no Che, right?
There's
no Che if there's no asthma.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, it was what he did when he was home alone with asthma. It's like when I got sick with mono, I just watched reruns of like Saved by the Bell. Like, I didn't learn anything, you know? Like,
okay, so we're taking asthma out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that to a certain extent, we can blame his parents for, you know, you learn a lot of the things you have, you know, who you are from your parents, right? Hmm. But he also had way too many influences for me to be like, oh, that's straight up parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A parent problem. So I think we can take the parents off the board.
Yeah, I think he himself has a really big role in this. If he didn't have that character, all of these influences, the parents, the asthma, wouldn't have turned him into the man he became.
I'm going to shock myself right now by saying this.
Are you about to take Fidel off the board?
Hell no.
Oh, okay.
Hell no.
I was like, wow.
You're taking merch off.
No, I'm taking Latin machismo out.
What?
While I think that it is prevalent with those, you know, with Che.
Yeah.
I also think that it was an underlying part of the culture, and like not everyone is Che.
True.
Similar to asthma, I think that Latin machismo is part of Che.
Here, I want to make a case for eliminating American fat cats. To me, the fat cats, it's sort of like the scorpion and the frog, right? Like a fat cat is just acting in their own sort of, that's in their nature. They want to grow, they want to exploit, like, and they want to get bigger. But I think where we've gone too far is we created the CIA and we had military interventions to protect those interests.
I also think that we can take the Bolivians and the president off. Well, I think that they literally killed him. Yeah, they're high-fiving over there. While they literally killed him, I think
you guys
that this
just
is
got away with murder. I hope you're happy.
Yeah.
I do think this is bigger than the Bolivians.
Yeah, and if we take the fat cats off, then we got to take the Bolivians off because they were defending the hegemony of the country. There was this white invader dude trying to take over the country.
Yeah.
What are they going to do?
Yeah.
I also think that we can take his bad friends out
because
his worst friend was Castro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like that encompasses it. Yeah. There's a decision to be made here. As much as I almost took out merch, but then I was like, gosh, it almost like fed into his ego.
Well, and it also gave Fidel the reason to do what he did. So it's tricky.
Maybe
it's also the reason the CIA was after him.
So are we, I mean, is it a situation where we send merch to jail?
To slap merch.
The CIA, I was going to say, like, what came first, the chair or the CIA, right?
That's a tough one.
They're involved, like, way too close to the end of his death.
Yeah, and then they get involved, like, the whole, everything that happens in Latin America after that is all baked into that. Oof.
What killed him? What killed, honestly,
killed Che?
I want to say Castro killed him. This is going to be controversial, guys.
Yeah,
whatever we pick, it's going to be bad. We're going to get those emails.
Can we put Castro and Che's relationship Just combine them.
Just combine them. That doesn't that absolve guilt?
Yeah, I guess
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
I would go for a suicide over a murder.
Yeah, I ultimately feel in my heart of hearts that Che is the most responsible for his own death than anyone else.
Mm.
Oh, this hurts.
Heartbreak.
I gotta agree with you in what I was. The reason I said, "Oh, this hurts,"
yeah.
is because I almost had Castro. I think that we should send Che to the alarmist jail.
I think so.
And I think that we should give Castro the big slap.
I'm good with that. It feels like we've done something wrong.
That feels a little
but
wrong.
But if sometimes. Things
difficult
should,
things
difficult should feel things yeah. should feel a little bit wrong. This division between Che, the good guy, and
the Ernesto and Che.
Yeah,
yeah.
And the person that kind of lost his mind. That makes me feel a little bit bad.
Yeah. It's because you end up only with that Che. And then you lose the Motorcycle Diaries somehow. Yeah.
Well, why don't we say that we're sending Che to jail, but Ernesto... Oh, yes. Can go free.
We keep Gael. We keep Gael Garcia Bernal Che, and then we yeah. send Benicio del Toro Che to jail.
I feel like that is maybe symbolic. In that is the merch. I feel like that's what. Then we're sending the merch to jail.
Oh my god!
Wow. Because it's
true. Kind of.
That's a twist at the end.
Che is the icon.
Yeah.
But Ernesto, he doesn't live on a shirt. He breathes and it. If we
with trouble,
he bleeds.
He breathes with trouble.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Holy yeah, shit. Do.
Wow, that's good.
Oh, so are we sending merch to the alarmist?
Yeah.
This is taking a real turn.
Chun, chun, chun.
Boy, you can see those guys and gals when we open the alarmist jail to put in just a box of t-shirts. And they're like, what the fuck?
They're like, what is this?
This is your new uniform. They're all now wearing like jail pants, like striped jail pants that would like shake when they're shirts over
oh, that's
there.
That's fantastic.
I'm calling it, guys. Castro, you're getting the big slap. Che merch, you're going to the alarmist jail.
Ooh.
Ooh, so close. Oh.
It feels good,
so
though.
Close.
It that, must feel good.
It feels right.
Yeah, right? That feels better because feels my better. My ignorance on a person based just on one image of him as opposed to knowing the person, that makes me feel better about this the whole thing.
Putting him in prison.
Yeah.
Putting the picture of him in prison
yeah.
without knowing.
That's good. Just gonna put him on the wall.
Just get him in there.
Well, guys, it's been such a pleasure
Amazing.
Talking and figuring
lovely.
Out who's to blame.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't have done it without you. Really couldn't.
Well, thank
that
you
was
for
so much fun. Thanks for inviting us.
Bringing us in here.
After the execution of Che, the Bolivians flew Che's body to Valle Grande, where his corpse was photographed. The Bolivians had a strong desire to show definitive proof that Che was dead. Later in 1967, Castro delivered a eulogy for Che to a massive crowd at Havana's Plaza de la Revolución. Referring to the U.S., Castro said, quote, "They are mistaken who believe that his death is the defeat of his ideas, the defeat of his tactics, the defeat of his guerrilla concepts." Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at thealarmistthe on Twitter, at thealarmistpodcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Tulsa Massacre.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.